Accession number 16648, Reel 2.
Mr. Powell to Reel 2. What part did you play at the attack at Hillman?
Well, I didn't personally... My company didn't attack Hillman.
What was your company?
C Company. Two platoons of my company moved on to Rover, which they captured, but I was... we were moved down towards the Caen Canal.
What was your rank?
I was corporal then. And very, very soon afterwards, I was sergeant as we went on to... We moved from there. This was on the D-Day, was Tuesday. We moved from... It's difficult to remember each detail, but I remember going up to the... being sent up to the further side of the Caen Canal to see if there's any opposition up there with a section. And then we were dug in around the Caen Canal, and the Beaufort team came and joined us. And a German aircraft flew over so... A German fighter aircraft flew over so low, and the Beaufort fired at it, but immediately on its tail was a Spitfire, and it was shot down, and there was some doubt who claimed the shooting down, whether it was the Beaufort or the Spitfire, but I should imagine it was probably the Spitfire. We moved from there into a place called Cassell Wood. And we were, up until then, we hadn't had a lot of casualties. And we hadn't experienced a lot of shell fire because we were moving forward so quickly that we were missing the artillery barrage that was shelling the beaches. We moved into this Cassell Wood, and we dug there on a Saturday evening. But we were exhausted because we hadn't had any sleep whatsoever, and I hadn't had our boots off, and you were just digging. Each time we moved to a different spot, one had to dig. And after a few shelling incidents, the chaps didn't need telling. But prior to that, people were reluctant to dig. We moved in onto this forward edge of Cassell Wood and took up a defensive position. And I remember it was late Saturday evening, and I dug my own slit trench. I was down about 3 feet, and I just dropped down and fell asleep briefly. And I was woken by a very loud bang, explosion. And a shell had landed onto the next trench to me, which was platoon headquarters, and it had killed... The Piat man had got both his cases of bombs on the parapet, and these had exploded and killed the platoon commander, Lieutenant Tribe, a chap named Hasler, and wounded one or two more. We were then...
Which platoon were you in?
I was in 13th platoon.
So it was unlucky.
Yeah, 13. Unlucky 13. Then company commander called all NCOs and said that I'm moving you back into the wood, not because of any sentiment, but because it's the most sensible thing to do. But as soon as there's a threat of a counterattack, he said you'll be up in those positions, because what was happening, you see, the Germans had registered their shelling on the forward edge of the wood. So we moved back a little way into the wood, where we suffered several more casualties. Sergeant Major Overman was killed there. Lieutenant Papillon, Major Papillon, rather, was killed there, and several more. When there, we were in the Cassell Wood, I suppose, for several days. And I can well remember them taking it, saying a platoon at a time has got to go out for down the road towards the beaches to get a little bit of exercise to alleviate the cramp and through being in the wood and in these small positions for several days. And the experience was amazing, really, because as soon as we got onto a metal road, everyone went down as if they'd got rickets, because we'd been walking on this soft ground since we landed, and for about 50 yards until the circulation came back in our legs, we couldn't walk upright. It was remarkable, really. My next major recollection is we moved on. We were taken out of the line for, said we were going out for 2 days. We should still be under shell fire, but we wouldn't be doing defending anything, so we would have a chance for rest. Well, on the second day, we were told to get dressed, and we started to move forward. And we got in extended formation, C Company. And as we moved up over some open ground, we were shelled intensely. And we moved up to a start line. There, we were briefed just before then to say that we were going into an attack, a place called the Chateau de la Londe, which was the headquarters of, I think it was the 21st Panzer Group. Anyway, it was we moved up to this hedgerow, which was the start line. I was still a section commander then, and was told that 14 platoon would be on the left, 15 platoon on the right, and 13 platoon, which was my platoon, would be in reserve. But the point that we had some tin food brought up to us about 10 o'clock that evening. The weather was very hot, and I remember that none of us had any appetite for this food, because I think we anticipated what was going to happen. Just before dawn broke, we were told the shelling, both ours and the enemy, opened up intensely, and we moved forward, and it was very dark then, but as we moved forward, the shell fire was almost lit up all the area in front of us, and we moved forward and had numerous casualties on the way, until we eventually got to our objective, which was the chateau, or the grounds of the chateau. And but then I think I was the only section in 13 platoon, and I could see 14 platoon, or the remnants of 14 platoon, on the outskirts of the chateau, and I was being called by Lieutenant Woodward to come and join them, which we did. And from there we were counterattacked with tanks, And it transpired that we were being shelled from the flank, from a place called Epron. And we took over some of the German trenches that advocated. And I remember two Mark IV tanks coming out, and our Piat man knocked one out, which immediately caught on fire, and the two crew came out the escape hatch, which was, they were shot by our Bren gunner in my section. And then a Mark IV tank came up the hedgerow and started to throw grenades. But when the pit opened up, he withdrew quickly. Then I think we held that, we secured that position, and we were there for several days before the Pithead Division went through us. But there is a memorial to the battalion at the chateau now, stating it was captured by the 1st Suffolk. And we had 160 casualties in that morning, from the time of the attack until we captured it.
How frightening was it?
Yeah. Oh, terrible. Really. But never experienced it. It really was horrific. But from then onwards, of course, one feared information that you got the night before that you were going into an attack the next day. Because according to the process of, according to the law of average, I mean, if you'd escaped so far, it looked, and we were being continually reinforced, that it looked that it might be your turn next. However, when we were at the chateau, it one evening, Lieutenant Woodward came and said, "I've got to take out a patrol to capture a prisoner." And he selected about nine or ten of us. We were supposed to go down to this. It had been reported that vehicles were going from Larbejude to Epron and back. And we must have had some wrong information, because according to what he was saying, this roadway that were going, these vehicles were using, it seemed that it was on the front of the position, which was, you know, ridiculous. Anyway, he said, "We've got to go down there," and he said to me, "I want you to lead a patrol with two Bren gunners, and you get to the roadway, and there's two more Bren gunners that will be a few yards behind you. When you get down there, I want you to put these four Bren gunners out at the four positions astride the road, the four corners, as it were." And then there was a Hawkins grenade team coming up that were to string a necklace of Hawkins grenades across the road. And we were there to lay wait until a vehicle came along, blew its wheel off, was half track. And then he, with two men, was going to run in, take a prisoner, and we would withdraw. Well, that seemed all right in theory, but anyway, he said to me, "You'll be, so I want you to be about 70 yards in front of the rest of the main patrol." So I struck off with a private Taylor and a private Smith. And the three of us, I had one on either side of me, we went through this cornfield, which was by the chateau. And the German front line was at the other side of the cornfield. So you can tell they were no more than three or four hundred yards from us. And he said to me, this field was standing corn, and he said that you can please yourself when you get to the rise in the ground, whether you crawl or not. So it was a bright moonlight night against all our training. We went all against our training principles, really, because we walked, and we must have been silhouetted. We went through this corn, and as we went on, voices shouted out, "Halt!" And at the precise moment when they shouted "Halt!", all the front line opened up with Spando machine guns, all on fixed lines, firing about 1 in 5 tracer. So fortunately for us, they were on fixed lines, because we hadn't gone through the crossfire. And by that time, Taylor had been hit. He'd got a bullet in his thigh. Lieutenant Wood rang up, and he said, "What's up?" And we'd been told, if we were surprised, that we'd got to every man for himself to make his own way back. Well, we turned to run, and this Mr. Woodward, he covered me almost, trying, as if you were going to go past someone. He more or less completely shielded me, because they threw a grenade. And this grenade, he took the full impact of it. And when we eventually got everybody dashed back, but we, you know, I carried this Taylor back. And when we got through our lines, remember the password coming back was Elephant and Castle. And we got through into our lines, and he said to me, "Do you mind if I go now?" And I said, "No, not at all." So he went down to the regimental aid post, assisted by a company runner, and we didn't see him anymore until he came back to the battalion about 6 months later. He was wounded pretty badly. The tailor, I ripped his trousers and put his field dressing on. I never saw him from... I've never seen him from that day to this. So I don't know what happened to him. He was taken off to hospital, of course, but what happened to him, I don't know afterwards. I think he survived the war, but...
But you weren't wounded?
No, I wasn't, no. No, extremely lucky. I think I've got the casualty list in the office there. We had over 200 killed and 600 wounded in a battalion.
That's nearly everybody.
Yeah. Well, of course, we were reinforced. The reinforcements were being killed and wounded, you see. This was, which was so remarkable, really, from my point of view, because I was... From then on, I was made a sergeant at the chateau, and frequently I was platoon commander, you see, because of officer shortage. And so through into Germany, I commanded a platoon quite frequently until we got a reinforcement officer. And then sometimes I was taken over sergeant major, because a sergeant major had been killed or wounded. And I think statistics say that of the 900 or so that landed, there was 170 who landed on D-Day still remaining with the battalion. But if you take into account that a big percentage of those were A echelon drivers and that sort of thing, but if you're in a duty company... there weren't any duty company chaps left, because you were subject to the you know, more dangerous aspect of the...
The fighting.
The fighting, yeah.
What do you remember happening next after this rather disastrous patrol?
From there, we... where did we go? Well, of course, we moved... We were there and moved on across the Orne. And eventually... We were holding, of course, the Caen area. The British Second Army was holding that until the Americans had cleared the Cherbourg Peninsula. So consequently, when the Americans cleared Cherbourg, then they turned and came in line, and then all the Allies went forward there, and there was a breakthrough. The army broke through on the Pas-de-Calais, and that led, of course, to the Falaise Gap, where we went. We captured a place called Fleurs. I remember in the night preceding that, C Company, we were to attack some high ground just outside Fleurs, and an officer we used to have then, what they called LOB, left out of battle, which was very often a private, an NCO and an officer. And the object of this was if the company was wiped out, you had a nucleus to be in charge to form again with reinforcements. On this particular occasion, there was a Lieutenant Gray was left out of battle. He was subsequently killed on a patrol over the Mars. Anyway, he was at Battalion HQ. We captured, C Company captured this high ground. But as soon as we captured it, we came under heavy artillery fire. And my company commander had the presence of mind to fire a very light. And this Lieutenant Gray who was down by Battalion HQ, ran into HQ and said, stop, tell them to stop, they're shelling C Company. And that was our own artillery that was dropping it onto us. Anyway, it ceased immediately. But that night, we were counterattacked by a few odd enemy. But in the morning, when it got light, we moved forward into an orchard, and remember, we took several prisoners there. But doing that early morning, and we heard the Germans moving, pulling out. But a strange thing happened on the main road to Fleurs. Our water cart was coming up to the battalion, and it missed the battalion HQ, and he went forward. And he didn't meet any opposition. When he turned and came back, the commanding officer discovered this, and they said, he said he hadn't met any opposition. So we immediately dispatched anti-tank guns and Bren gun carriers forward and to the surrounding countryside, and discovered that the Germans had pulled back there. So we moved forward into Fleurs. And we spent a few days around the outskirts of Fleurs, my company did anyway. And then I suppose my next recollection is Belgium and Holland, the Escaut Canal, at and then... eventually onto Wiert, Venray, Overloon. We captured Overloon. or took part in the assault on Overloon and Venray. A place called Molenbeek, where we were supposed to move forward with the support of the Guards tanks, independent Churchill tanks, creating a supporting role for the infantry. And as they were going over a place called Molenbeek, all these tanks just became immobile because of the marshy ground. And we went forward. There was a single bridge over this. It was much like the Fens. And there were one or two German machine gunners left behind on this, covering this road, and consequently held up the battalion for quite a while. And they had mined all the way around this bridge. And our commanding officer at that time was a Colonel Craddock, who came from the, I think it was the East Surreys, very good CO. And he, I saw him, I was acting Sergeant Major then for C Company. And he walked around by this bridge, and he stood on the shoe mine. I saw him lose his foot. And two of our stretcher bearers went in after him, got him on the stretcher, making their way out. And one of the stretcher bearers stood on the mine. The whole lot went up. He did a somersault off the stretcher. And then I think it was Major Mayhew then who came up and went in, eventually found a way out through the minefield. And we went on there to, from there to Overloon, Venray, onto the Mars. I think at that particular time, Field Marshal Montgomery said that he wanted the Germans, every German the other side of the Mars. And there was a small number of them at, that had come over into a small wood called Wonsom Wood. And they were commanding this ground, but because it was all open country there, flat, and they could stop any progress by virtue of their firepower from this wood. And anyway, Montgomery wanted every German across the Mars, so I think one or two companies of the battalion had tried to drive them back, but suffered casualties over this open ground. Eventually, it was C Company's turn to have a go. So we went, but this time we got kangaroos, you know, the infantry. And it was bitterly cold weather. And I remember going through in these kangaroos through Venray, and the tanks were fitted with snowshoes, but it was still sliding on the road. And we lined up at the start line at this